to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Manny.
And this episode is Comic Source Episode 211, Marvel Chronology Project, Secret Wars Prelude, Avengers 240 and 241. So, an interesting couple of books, I'll say. I think Manny and I had very different reactions to the books. Well, first of all, I should say that what the Marvel Chronology project is. So, I've fallen off the Marvel bandwagon over the last few years, and I wanted to get back into it, get kind of caught up with where Marvel is now. And so I was thinking, oh, where do I start? You know, I left off sporadically here and there, missed big chunks. I was pretty well versed in what was going on. So, like the early 2000s, let's say, and then I kind of dropped off and didn't come back around till like the first Civil War. Read that, felt a little lost, and then just pretty much didn't read anything since then. You know, it's been quite a while. So I was trying to think of a way to get back into it, and I wanted to know, you know, I heard so many good things about Jonathan Hickman's run on Fantastic Four and his run on Avengers, and then he did the new Secret Wars miniseries, and I thought, oh, that's it, Secret Wars. I'll look for a reading order that covers like this huge timeline, and go back and read like the entire first Secret Wars, second one, third one, Hickman's recent one. And so I know Manny hadn't read a lot of this classic early to mid 80s Marvel. So we found a reading order, courtesy of a website that's run by the Comic Book Herald. That's, in fact, the name of the website is comicbookherald.com. There's a link in the show notes. And he had this complete Secret Wars chronology. And we thought, okay, we're going to go and we're going to read the entire thing, all the preludes. So some of the preludes I've never read. I've never read these two issues we're going to talk about in just a couple minutes here. But I've read a lot of it. I've read Secret Wars several times. You know, it's enjoyable. And so, you know, I was hoping Manny would like it. So that's kind of the impetus behind this. We're going to go through and read the whole thing. It's probably take a while because there's a lot of books, and we may double up like we are in this episode where we're covering two books. And there may be times where we cover three or four, just kind of depending on timing and schedule. And I mean, the thing about these older books, and Manny will attest to this, is they tend to be a little wordy. So, you know, nowadays, art kind of dominates. You see a lot of splash pages, a lot of bigger panels. There's various reasons for that we could talk about. You know, the change in quality of paper and printing and coloring, which, you know, allows for bigger artwork with, you know, that just looks cleaner and better. And, you know, just the whole decompressed storytelling that Brian Michael Bendis kind of brought into vogue. So, like I said, a lot of reasons, and we could debate that. That's a conversation for another time. But the bottom line is, you know, most comics now, if you pick up a comic off the stands today and it takes you 15 minutes to read it, that's probably more the exception than the rule. Whereas some of these older comics here, we're talking like 30 minutes, man. I mean, you really got a lot more bang for your buck, especially since, what are the cover prices for these? Like 60 cents? Yeah, 60 cents. And I remember when they went, like when I first started reading comics for 50 cents, and then they went to 60, and then 75, and then $1, $1.25. And it seems like each price increase, you know, came quicker and quicker. But they were 60, they were 50 cents for a long time, and then 60 for a long time. So, I mean, 60 cents and you got, you know, half hour worth of entertainment is pretty good compared to nowadays. You pay $4 or $5 and you get about 5 to 10 minutes maybe. So, just a different style of storytelling. I wouldn't say that one is better than the other. So, well, let's dive into the books themselves. First, we'll talk about Avengers number 240. Writers Roger Stern and Ann Nesenti. Breakdowns by Al Milgrom and finishes by Joe Sinnott. So, this is a two-part story. These one story leads to the next. And it's a Jessica Drew story. She's kind of the main focus of this story here. So the Avengers have been called to a hospital in San Francisco, which was always Jessica Drew, for those of you who don't know, was the original Spider-Woman. That was where she was based out of San Francisco. And her friend Tigra, who was formerly an Avenger, calls in the rest of the Avengers, and because they found Jessica in this near-death state, she's catatonic, and Tigra's like, hey, what can you guys do for me? So come to find out, it has to do with Morgan Le Fay and all kinds of supernatural stuff. And basically, Jessica's like life essence has been separated from her body. And so the Avengers eventually contact Hank Pym and Doctor Strange. And they end up traveling to the astral plane, and they see Jessica's quote-unquote ghost there, and they end up fighting Morgan Le Fay, and all this whole plot of Jessica being in this near-death state is all a plan by Morgan Le Fay. She wants to destroy her former student who's been in love with Jessica. His name is Magnus. I guess he's been a supporting character in the Spider-Woman comic before, and it seems like him and Jessica have a long familiarity and relationship with each other. And so Jessica, or Morgan Le Fay, I should say, her plan is to destroy her old student, trap Jessica on the astral plane, or her life essence on the astral plane, and take over her body on Earth. So the Avengers discover this over time throughout the two issues, and they manage to stop Morgan Le Fay with the help of Magnus, who sacrifices himself. And Jessica eventually returns to her body, but supposedly through the trauma of the ordeal, she has lost all her Spider-Woman abilities, her spider sting and her strength and ability to stick to walls and all that kind of stuff. So that's basically the story in a nutshell. One thing that and Manny and I were talking about this before we started the podcast, there are some other plot lines that are running through. It's very much more of a soap opera kind of story as opposed to the stories you see today. So there are other plot threads that run in and out. One of them doing with the Vision, who's been plugged into the Avengers computer due to an attack and repairs that he needs to do. Because it's interesting, he'd always been a separate individual. Whereas, like, if you look at the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it kind of went the other way around. Like, he was a computer first and then eventually became a individual, or I guess artificial intelligence or whatever you want to call it. So it's kind of backwards. And so that's a plot line that eventually leads to a big story later on. There's also some plot lines with Captain America and Hawkeye and Wasp and her relationship with Henry Pym and things like that. So, as I said, a much different type of story, a different way to tell a story. And I think you don't really see that in comics now, where you have these long running subplots that may take a year or even sometimes a year and a half to kind of come to fruition. And I think part of the reason for that is people tend to write for the trade more now. So they want, you don't want any plot threads or anything that are kind of dangling. I guess maybe The Walking Dead might be an example where it's a little more long form storytelling. So in a way I kind of miss it, but Manny didn't enjoy it very much. So let me turn it over to Manny now, and you can tell everybody what you told me before we started recording and just give us your thoughts on the books overall and the type of storytelling and all that, and then we'll talk a little bit about the art.
I was thinking of why I'm not so invested into this. These two books, that is. I think it's because it's, you know, I know that we're specifically looking for a couple of moments in the entire book where there's like aberrations, there's change in scenery, there's a spike in something out of the ordinary, whereas the rest of the book, it's kind of, like you said, subplots and something that I'm definitely not invested in, obviously, because I haven't read it. So I'm going page to page, and there is that much dialogue to get through. It was a little daunting. It's not like last week's books, the New Mutants books, where you kind of learn something about character. And it did a good job at kind of filling you in on what's going on. So I think that's it's just that I know that we're just looking for a certain moment, and because of that, it kind of takes me out of the, like you said, the mood to read the book.
Yeah, and we should talk a little. I didn't mention that at all. So, you know, we're reading these because they tie into Secret Wars, and you know, Manny couldn't even get through these books, and like you're skimming through it. And if you're looking for those moments, as opposed to what we saw in Amazing Spider-Man or Uncanny X-Men or New Mutants, if you're not, I mean, if you're not paying a lot of attention, you can really miss where this ties in. I mean, it's so inconsequential. And so I get, you know, maybe subtle, I should say. It's a lot more subtle than the crossover, the tie-ins with the other books. And so, I mean, I guess I can see a point for going either way with it. You know, in the previous books we've read, the tie-in to Secret Wars was more overt. You know, like Professor Xavier sensing this, and it was like an actual story point. And so it made it seem like, well, something's going on. But again, different type of story. So you knew that it was just another subplot that was going to pay off eventually. But it seemed more important. It seemed, you know, like something you should pay attention to more so than in here. So in both these books, it's basically Vision being in that Avengers computer and him sensing a power surge. In 240, it's just a real slight thing, and he just kind of notices it and kind of comments on it. And in the second book, he's actually, Vision is talking to Captain America and Hawkeye, and there's a big power surge in the Avengers computers to where one of them kind of explodes. So it's much more noticeable there. But you have to remember, like, at the time that these books got released, I mean, nobody knew that Secret Wars was coming. I mean, it was still a few months off, so maybe you heard something about it, didn't know anything of what it was, because they didn't, you know, it wasn't like today where everything is, you know, everybody knows the whole story before anything even hits the stands, practically. So that's a little bit different, and definitely more subtle and very easy to miss. In fact, when I finished 240, I had to go back. I was like, wait, so where does it tie in? And then I was like, oh, so this little power surge that the Vision senses, that's got to be it, you know? Because there's nothing else in there that it possibly could have been. Because for all I knew, reading that, it was part of the Vision subplot. Because there's another subplot that starts with Vision interjecting himself into the computers of the Avengers. So, yeah, I agree with you. It is a lot of text. I got through it. I mean, I'm kind of these are the comics that I grew up reading. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the quality of this book, these two books, was of lower quality than like Uncanny X-Men by Chris Claremont. And I guess that's why you don't hear too many people looking to collect this old school Avenger stuff, unless they just want to have a complete run, you know, as opposed to, you know, Claremont's X-Men. There's those books hold more value. You know what I'm saying?
Yep, completely.
But I still am a little disappointed that you couldn't get through them, but I will say, we talked about this before too. You kind of have to be in the mood for it, you know. This is more of a, all right, let me do a big Avengers run when I just gonna sit around on a lazy, you know, Sunday afternoon. And you're probably right. There's probably a better starting point to start than 240, because you are kind of thrown into the middle. I mean, it is the start of a new main story thread, but there are all those subplots going on. But again, you know, based on the way stories were told back then, you kind of, if you wanted to read a particular title, that's kind of what you had to do. You just had to kind of just jump in and know that the subplots, you were going to catch on to what was going on if you just kind of stuck with it. You know, because as a kid, I wasn't going to go back all the way to Avengers 1 and read them all the way through, you know, like that wasn't an option, you know. There weren't really comic book shops back then, not to date myself too much.
Yeah.
But yeah, it didn't tie in a whole heck of a lot. So, what do you think of the artwork?
The artwork is cool. I like that style of artwork. It's obviously dated, and I like that. I like that classic looking She-Hulk and the Wasp and characters like that. Those classic looking. I mean, they used to do a really good, not that they don't do a good job today, but facial expressions, they seem to have put a lot of emphasis back then on expressions, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, Alan Milgrom, he was a pretty prolific artist. Did a lot of work on the Avengers, did a lot of work on West Coast Avengers. And he doesn't have the best rendering, which I think, like I said, it, when I went through the creative lineup, you've got Milgram on breakdowns, right? So that's a pretty rough way to start. And then you have Joe Sinnott, who's, you know, a legendary inker on finishes. And actually, I don't know that I read the creative lineup for 241. So again, written by Roger Stern and Ann Nesenti, breakdowns by Al Milgram, finishes by Joe Sinnott, and on 241, he's joined by Andy Mushinsky. So for those not familiar with the art term, so breakdowns, he's doing the panel layouts, like the way the panels look on the page, as well as the layouts within the panel. So, but it's very rough. It's not polished. And so then Sinnott would come behind him, and as a finisher, he would tighten up the lines, you know, ink over and kind of, but he had a lot more freedom to change things as opposed to, you know, a penciler working now that is handing over to an inker finished pencils. And then the finisher would also do the color work. So, as I said, Milgram, a very classic Marvel artist. I mean, this, when you look at just the panel layouts and the poses, you know, for example, the way he has Doctor Strange holding his hands while he's casting the spells, the way he shows hair, the way a lot of the heroes are kind of shaking their fists at different times. I mean, these are all real classic Marvel poses. The splash page on 241 is a great example. She-Hulk's kind of got one foot forward, the other foot back. She's like running towards, you know, the reader. Her arms are, you know, outspread. You've got Star Fox and Wasp kind of flying in the air behind her, you know, one on her left, one on her right. I mean, it's just, it's very evocative of that Marvel feel. So I think that a lot of people have probably, if they've looked at a Marvel comic from the 80s or any number of Marvel comics from the 80s, they've probably seen some Al Milgram art without even realizing it. And they probably would readily identify it as kind of a Marvel house style, almost, that you would say. So, he was never my favorite artist, but a solid guy, very good storytelling. I just didn't necessarily care for his, not his rendering, I guess more his sense of perspective and his, I don't know, just, I guess you would say his style. I mean, I love his panel layouts and I love the way he lays things out within the panels. But there are just times when his stuff just looks a little too over-exaggerated for my taste, I guess you'd say. But he's a solid guy and really good storyteller. And man, he's great at portraying emotion. So, I mean, I was never disappointed when Al Milgram was the artist on a book. And he's one of the artists that I could recognize pretty early on. But I didn't get blown away by his stuff like a John Byrne or a Sal Buscema, I guess you'd say. So, all in all, yeah, it's an okay. It's an 80s Avengers story for sure. And like Manny and I said, it just barely ties into Secret Wars. So, for the sake of being complete and reading the entire Secret Wars chronology that Comic Book Herald put together, we decided to read it, and one of us actually did. But I don't know that I'd say run right out and, you know, read this right away. So, all right, next thing we want to mention in this episode is we have our Comic Source Awards coming up for 2017. So I just want to go over the categories real quick, and maybe we'll throw out a mention or two. So the first category is Best New Hero or Hero Team. So that's a hero or a hero team that made its debut in 2017. And that is a cover date rather than actually date on the stands. Next category, Best New Villain or Villain Team, followed by Best New Ongoing Comic. So again, that's a comic that has a cover date of January 2017 through December of 2017. Best Limited Series, and that's for a limited series that had to have its last issue published in 2017. Best Cliffhanger or Moment, pretty self-explanatory. Best Storyline, and that could be an event or a storyline within a book. So you could do, Secret Empire from Marvel, or you could do War of Jokes and Riddles from Batman. So whatever you want. Best Sleeper or Surprise Hit. Best Ongoing Comic. So that can be a comic that debuted in 2017, but it can also be a comic that's from super long time ago. Best Graphic Novel. And I'm going to kind of expand this one a little bit, because maybe I should say Best Graphic Album, because it doesn't necessarily have to be an OGN. It could be like something like a DC puts out their art books, IDW does their artist editions. Also, DC does the 75th anniversary of Robin and all that kind of stuff. So something like that would be covered under Best Graphic Novel as well. Best or Favorite Cover, Best Artist, Best Cover Artist, Best Writer, Best Writer / Artist. So that's not a writer-artist team. That's for a person that both wrote and drew a book. Best Inker, Best Color Artist, Best New Talent, which is pretty subjective. It doesn't necessarily have to be somebody whose first comic book credit is in 2017, but it shouldn't be somebody who's, hit it big. I know one of the podcasts I used to listen to and still do occasionally, they had like the same person as Best New Talent, like 3 years in a row, because each year he kind of took another step. So that's kind of interesting. Most underrated book. So that's probably for a book that you really enjoy, or Manny and I really enjoy, that we're thinking other people should be reading. Biggest disappointment. Biggest comic story. And that doesn't have to necessarily be a story in a comic, but rather something that generated news or mainstream media coverage. And finally, most anticipated moment of 2018. So... we always enjoy doing these awards. It's really tough sometimes to narrow it down to one. Invariably, yes. These episodes end up going a little long. What are you having the hardest time thinking back on and finding a pick for, Manny?
Well, we talked about this before the podcast, that 2017 was really long. For both of us. And, so some of these books, they seem like they're from 2 years ago and so on. So, what I'm having most trouble with is really going back and finding a cover that I really enjoyed, as well as narrowing down, somebody specifically in like inking or colors. Because we talked about that, right now with where we are, we're kind of, binge catching up on a lot of books. I know that on Sunday I read 18 issues of Red Hood and the Outlaws.
So that goes back further than a year.
Yeah. So just things like that. So it's the art categories that they're getting me a little bit.
Yeah. I kind of feel the same way. Some things I'm caught up on, some things I'm not, some things I've heard really good things about, but I just haven't read it. And it's like, man, I wish I was caught up on everything so I could really give like an overall objective, pick, because I may overlook something inadvertently just because I haven't gotten around to reading it yet. So I actually have a list of things that hopefully I'm going to check out this weekend that I've heard good things about, or something I really wanted to read, or something I want to get caught up on, to see if it will, if it'll fill any of the categories for me. And the other thing is, as you said, with binging stuff lately, it's like, okay, so I know that I recently went back and read like Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps, like from the Rebirth issue forward. And there were some really cool moments in there. So it's like, okay, what moments really stood out to me? Cause I've read so much lately, it's hard to remember. And of those moments that stood out to me, was it an issue that was in 2017 or was it from before? Because you know, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps debuted in 2016. So it's going through stuff like that, you know, and I know it's first world problems and everything, and we really just do it for fun. But we still, you know, I still want to make sure that I give credit where credit is due. So, we look forward to doing that issue. As I said, it usually ends up being a supersized issue. We're going to try to keep it under an hour. Especially because it's going to be over on our, exclusive podcast for the 9-panel, for LRM Online, which is the 9-panel grid. And, those are more for beginning comic, listeners. So we want to keep it, you know, on the shorter side. And actually, I think maybe what we'll do is we'll release that one on both on the Comic Source and on LRM. So people can find it either place. But yeah, I know you laugh, Maddie, when I say, because invariably I end up naming three or four things before I finally pick one. But yeah, we're gonna try to keep it under an hour, man. Let me see how.
Not gonna happen.
How many
Let's try to just keep it under an hour and a half. That seems more realistic.
All right, wait. So 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. So there's 21 categories. So that's a little. It's about what, 2.5 minutes a category. Maybe 2 minutes.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, 2 minutes per category. Man, that's like a minute each per category. Would be like talking as fast as we can, just rattling it off. Yeah, you're right. There's no way we're going to keep it under, I don't know. So we'll see. You know, there may be things, though, that we overlap on that we won't necessarily have to mention. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
I guess we'll see. Anyway. If any of you listeners out there have any suggestions, of things that you think that we should consider, please, send us a tweet or a message on Facebook or Instagram, or you can email us at, thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. You can go to the website and click the email link there and reach out to us. We'd love to hear your thoughts, before we make our final decisions. Hope probably going to record this episode sometime this weekend. So if you have any thoughts, suggestions, get them to us as soon as you can, and we'll definitely consider them. So sorry that the Avengers 240, 241 Secret War tie-ins weren't more to your liking, Manny. I hate making you.
That's all right. I wasn't going to like everything, but it's not like this is one of the, you know, Secret War's main titles. This is one of the prelude titles that we're doing just to be thorough. So, you know, it's at least a feather in the cap to say that we got through all of them.
Yeah, but, you know, I feel bad because I want you, you know, here I am trying to introduce you to some, you know, some older stuff that, you know, you maybe haven't been exposed to before. So...
Yeah, but to be fair, you know, out of the Spider-Man books, the X-Men books and everything, these are the first two that I really just really wasn't feeling. But, you know, it's going to happen in a long, long line of books.
Yeah, that's true. you did enjoy the Spider-Man books, and it seemed like you really dug on the X-Men and New Mutants books, so.
Oh, yeah, I mean, who doesn't? I mean, then again, it'll be almost sacrilegious to say I didn't enjoy Chris Claremont. So.
Yeah, that's true. All right, everybody. Well, we'd like to thank you all for joining us. Please visit us at thecomicsourceblog.com for past episodes of the podcast. You can also find episodes of our YouTube channel there, as well as our famous sketch gallery. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Also do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram. Keep up to date on new episodes and convention coverage. And I think the next convention I'm going to be at is Long Beach Comic Con. And I think you're going to be joining me for that one, Manny?
May or may not, but I'm leaning towards joining you. I actually haven't. Last year I did not get a chance to go to either of the Long Beach shows, so man, I need to make it back there. It's one of my favorite shows.
Wow. All right. Well, don't forget about our exclusive podcast in partnership with LRM Online, the 9-panel grid. Go to lrmonline.com to enjoy new episodes every Tuesday. And as I said, the next one we have coming up will cover the Comic Source Awards for 2017. Also, LRM Online has a lot of other podcasts covering pop culture, TV shows, movies, all that stuff. So I encourage you to go to the site and check out all their content. So thanks for joining us, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.